Hello, my name is Tom Franco, and I'm a partner at Clayton, Dubilier & Rice. We want to welcome all of you to today's conversation with Dr. Karim El-Saul. He's the founder of Gulf Capital, a private markets manager focused on investing in growth markets. Gulf Capital employs a thematic and socially conscious investment approach, partnering with dynamic entrepreneurs and exceptional management teams. The firm supports the businesses it acquires with a combination of growth capital, strategic advice, and operational expertise. This in turn drives sustainable long-term value creation. I first met Karim more than a decade ago, I think. Karim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but over the years, I've been impressed how you have really evolved and adapted Gulf Capital's strategy. Today, you invest across ascending Asia. That's really from West Africa to East Asia. We'll talk about this more in a moment, but a very interesting strategic development. In addition to his firm leadership responsibilities, Karim chairs the Global Private Capital Association Middle East Council. He's a member of the Sustainable Markets Initiative, the Private Equity Task Force on Sustainability, and serves on the board of several companies, nonprofits, and is very active at his alma mater, Georgetown University. Not as good as Notre Dame University, where I went to school, but nevertheless, a very good school, where he earned his MBA after receiving a degree in engineering from Cornell University. And along the way, Karim also picked up a PhD in economics. With that as a setup, let's get started. How are you today, Karim?
I'm very well, Tom.
Thank you for being here. Let's start with you telling us about your journey to Gulf Capital. I noticed from your bio that you do have a PhD. Did you ever consider being a professor?
Not really. My journey to Gulf Capital started, I grew up in the Gulf in Saudi Arabia. Then I went to boarding school in France and then studied in the US. As you said, I did engineering at Cornell and MBA at Georgetown. Then I was lucky to find a job at International Privatization Group at Pricewaterhouse in Washington, D.C. And they sent me around the world advising governments on restructuring and selling state-owned companies. So I work in Russia, in Turkey, Philippines, Moldova, North Africa, all over the world. And it was a great exposure and the best classroom I could have. So I decided to do a byproduct of my work, a PhD on privatization. And I was fortunate that at Sciences Po, Institut d'Etudes Politiques de Paris, they allowed me to work while doing a PhD at the same time. And after 3 years of doing this work, I finished and got my PhD at Sciences Po. So really, the work led to the PhD. It's not the PhD that led to the work.
Well, it's a long and windy road to Gulf Capital, but it sounds like a lot of these experiences are proving to be very relevant today, and we'll get to that. But I think let's really get to the heart of the matter, which is when we think about Gulf Capital, how would you articulate its special sauce? What makes Gulf Capital special?
I think as the largest private equity firm in the Gulf and operating from the Gulf across Asia as well, we've come up with a new investment style, what we call controlled growth buyouts. We borrowed a page from the West, the obsession with controlled buyouts, and a page from the East, the obsession with growth. And we married them together, and we perfected what we call the controlled growth buyouts model. And that has worked out very well for us. The other thing we're very focused on, a special sauce within growth markets, is our deep focus on operational improvements. We really believe the only way to deliver long-term returns is genuine EBITDA growth. So every time we invest in our companies, we roll our sleeves, we bring our operating partners, our industry advisors, and we really grow our companies. We transform them, we take them to new geographies, we optimize profitability, we really drive EBITDA growth. On average, we've tripled the profitability of our companies, and that operational improvement focus has really paid off for us.
And with many parts of the world confronting serious macro economic challenges, how are you being impacted in the various markets that you invest in? Will you be able to sustain this profitability increases that you've been able to generate in the past?
I think we're blessed to be based in one of the richest regions in the world, the Gulf region. Today it has one of the highest growth rates, coupled with the highest liquidity and one of the best credit ratings. In fact, given the high oil prices, the IMF is projecting that this region, the Gulf region, will receive over $1.3 trillion of fiscal surplus over the next 4 years. And what's interesting is the regional governments are using this windfall, this fiscal surplus, to invest and diversify their economies. And they're investing in high growth sectors like renewables, technology, fintech, tourism, entertainment. So they're doing a great job at diversifying their economies. And we're seeing a lot of growth. For example, Saudi Arabia, just in the second quarter, grew at 11.8% GDP growth rate. It's the highest in 11 years. So our region in the Gulf is seeing fantastic growth in the current environment. So that's in the short term. In the long term, we're looking very focused on the expansion in the East and South and Southeast Asia. I think that we're recreating this new growth corridor from West to East Asia that we call Ascending Asia. We're very focused on pushing into Asia from the Gulf. We've done 14 bolt-on acquisitions to date, and we want to take every portfolio company into this high growth corridor. If you look at Ascending Asia, from West to East Asia, by 2030, it will account for 60% of global GDP. We'll have an economy of $22 trillion. 60% of the world middle class will be in Asia. And they'll have over 800 million working age millennials. That's more than the population of the US and Europe combined. And we were looking 30 years out, the GDP of Ascending Asia will quadruple. So if you really, long term, if you want growth, you have to be in Ascending Asia.
This phrase, Ascending Asia, is an interesting one. And I've seen you talk about it in the context of a kind of a new Silk Road, so to speak. Can you just spend a little bit of time teasing out what this Ascending Asia opportunity is, how it really works?
Well, historically, there's been a lot of trade between the Near and the Far East, and they're natural trade partners, and a lot of investments flowed from the Gulf into Asia and vice versa. We're just working, investing along this corridor, and it's natural for our companies to expand from the Gulf into South and Southeast Asia and vice versa. So we are focused on this new Silk Road, as you say, and long term, the growth is in that corridor, essentially. So it's a unique focus, and we're good at it. And we're on the ground, essentially. We have offices across the Gulf. We just opened an office in Singapore. We have operations in India. So we want to invest along this near to Far East corridor.
And as you think about the sectors that are most attractively positioned in this Ascending Asia corridor, what are you most focused on?
I think we've evolved over time from being a generalist investor when we're incorporated to 2006 to a thematic investor. In 2016, we spent a lot of time when we launched our third fund trying to look into the future. We hired a number of consulting firms. We looked at 85 mega trends, map 45 sectors, and we said, where do you want to be invested for the next 10, 20 years? And through that exercise, a very cerebral top-down exercise, we decided to focus on technology and fintech, healthcare, consumer, business services, and sustainability, where we think there's going to be a lot of growth. So these are the five core priority investment sectors for us.
You know, there a lot of people that say investing in growth markets is not for the faint of heart. As you kind of think about capitalizing on these opportunities, in the markets that you're operating in, like the Gulf, what skills are most important to be a successful manager in your view?
First of all, I think private equity is a local business. You have to be on the ground. We have 4 offices across the region, 50 employees on the ground, and 95% of our employees are from the region, investing in the region. So it's true that they all studied and work abroad, but they came back to invest in the region. And they know how to navigate it, who to partner with, who to invest with. But another thing is that we're very focused on is control acquisitions. 81% of all of our deals have been control and majority stakes. I think that's very important to be able to control the destiny of our portfolio companies, to be able to bring our operating partners to fix and optimize these companies, and eventually to be able to exit them. It's much easier to sell and exit a controlling stake than a minority investment in a company.
The businesses that you're acquiring, are they mostly family businesses? And if so, how do you persuade a family to give you control of the jewels, so to speak?
It's interesting. Most of our deals come from families who founded the businesses many generations ago, and a lot of them have succession issues or want to grow or expand into new geographies, like from the Gulf into Asia or Africa and Europe. And they realize they need a partner to take them on that journey. And they realize having a small stake in a global business is much more interesting than having a large stake in a local business. So we help them globalize, internationalize. On an average, we've tripled the profitability of the companies we've invested in. So we really make a difference to these companies. And we have so many case studies of how we build global leaders out of the Gulf that actually a lot of entrepreneurs and family businesses are approaching us and saying, can you take us on that same journey?
Well, you've certainly achieved a lot of success and have raised multiple funds. Just switching gears a little bit here, I think you would agree that, you know, ESG has become a central focus for many private equity firms and LPs globally. Often it is a more of a reporting exercise than anything else, but it seems like you've adopted a value creation strategy that is linked to ESG. Talk about your approach to ESG, social responsibility, sustainability.
Well, we're fortunate to have global LPs who have been pushing us to adopt sustainability and ESG as early as 2012. So it's been a decade in the making. And you'd be surprised how demanding and how hard they drive us to adopt best practices. And that's part of the appeal of having global LPs, essentially. We have a number of DFIs, donor financial institutions, that back us, and European pension funds, and they care about ESG. And we learn from them. And since 2012, and lately in our third fund, we've been big adopters of ESG principles. We signed up to the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investing. We joined the Terra Carta, which was launched by the Prince of Wales. We are continuously evolving, but more importantly, it's not just at the Gulf Capital level. We're pushing these best practices into our portfolio companies. And in fact, the latest deals we've done, we've embedded our ESG best practices and reporting requirements into our term sheets. We're telling the portfolio companies, if you want to accept our funding, you have to accept this ESG terms. We want you to behave and operate in a certain style so that it's no longer optional. It was optional in the early days. We are driving that change, not only at Gulf Capital, but also deep at our portfolio companies.
So ESG is clearly an area where you have evolved. I guess one truth in the private equity industry is that you can't afford to stand still. Talk a little bit about Gulf Capital's evolution in recent years. What are the main things that make you different today than 5 years ago?
I think you have to continuously refine how you operate and how you invest, and you learn from fund to fund. We're fortunate to be launching our 4th vintage, GC Equity Partners 4, and we're getting better and better on it. The first one is our focus, almost obsession with control buyouts and driving change in our portfolio companies. We're continuously improving that. The other one is we're continuously building a deep bench of operating partners and industry experts. We have 25 operating partners, industry experts that we push into our portfolio companies to guide them and help them improve. And that focus on operational improvement is really making a difference for us today. 91% of our returns come from operational improvements and EBITDA growth. The other thing we've done since 2016, we switched from being a generalist investor to a thematic investor. We try to look into the future and see where the growth is coming. And that has led us to adopt new sectors where we were not involved, like technology and fintech. And the latest one is sustainability. We think you can actually make good money by doing good as well. So we are big investors in clean water, in the environment. We're looking at food security and renewables as well. So we're evolving as an investor, becoming a thematic investor and trying to pick the sectors of the future. And finally, I think while our roots are in the Gulf, we have a clear eye on Asia, and the growth is coming from there. And we opened offices in Singapore. We hired a local team. We're encouraging all of our companies to push into Asia. We've done 14 bolt-on acquisitions across Asia, and we want to build Asian leaders, essentially. And when we build Asian leaders, we can sell also at high Asian multiples. So we benefit and benefit our LPs by this push into Asia.
Karim, have you dropped any particular industries or areas that you used to invest in this new world?
Yes, we did. Our headquarters is in Abu Dhabi. And as you know, Abu Dhabi is very focused on oil and gas. But that was in the early days. We invested a lot in this sector. But we saw the writing on the wall in our Fund 3 in 2016. After the oil crash of 2014, investing in oil and gas became a very difficult sector. And not many investors and buyers are operating in this space. It's hard to exit that investments in this sector. So we decided to drop it, not to include it in Fund 3, and to focus instead on sustainability, renewables, green energy, if you will. We also avoid retail and F&B difficult sectors, essentially. We try to see what sectors are stressed in the West and avoid them early in the East, essentially. So we're benefiting our relationships with global investors and global firms, allow us to see where are the sources of growth and where are the difficulties, and we react accordingly very early on.
Well, Karim, thank you for that. Before wrapping up, I'd like to ask you a series of questions so our audience can get to know you. You know, private equity is a people business, so we want the audience to know who you are. So these questions are really intended not to trap you, but to allow you to let people know you. So I'm going to start with what books have you read recently?
Well, actually, I've read two books over the summer. One very interesting one is Prisoners of Geography by Tim Marshall. It discusses 10 maps and how they shape global politics. And it's amazing how geography constrains leaders and dictates their actions. And look at what Putin is doing with Ukraine. And he mentions that the flatland in Ukraine has been a launching pad of so many attacks against Russia through history. And Russian leaders have been obsessed with controlling Ukraine. If God had built mountains in Ukraine, you wouldn't have the war you have today. So that's an interesting book. Another one is by my good friend, Dr. Parag Khanna. The book is titled The Future is Asian. He talks about how 2/3 of the world growth will come from Asia and the growth potential of the region. It's interesting. If you think the 19th century was the European century and the 20th century was the American century, I can tell you for sure that the 21st century will be the Asian century. So it's a great read. The book is The Future is Asian.
Well, I took those recommendations down. Now, I know you work most of the time, but what are your favorite activities outside of work?
I think two favorite sports activities, windsurfing and skiing. Great pastimes, and they allow me to enjoy the great outdoors.
Excellent. I didn't realize windsurfing was in your repertoire, but that's great. What are some of your mentors?
I think I was fortunate to have a great chairman at Gulf Capital, Harib Dermaki. He's one of the world's biggest private equity investors. He's the founder of the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority's private equity department. And he is full of wisdom and a fantastic chairman and mentor for me.
Go-to news outlet. Where do you go for news, podcasts, website, whatever?
I read religiously every morning the Financial Times, Bloomberg, and the national newspaper in Abu Dhabi. So a bit of global, a bit of local news.
One word to describe Gulf Capital.
I would say growth. We're obsessed with growth in everything we do, growing our portfolio companies, our funds, our returns, essentially.
What's the best advice you received when you were driving in a car?
Can I give two advices?
Please.
One of them was stay in your lane. And the other one is keep your eyes on the road ahead, which actually also applies well on life in general.
What's your dream job outside of private equity?
Possibly to have been an architect. Since I studied civil engineering at Cornell, I really like architecture. I love architects like Zaha Hadid, who was originally from Iraq, and Renzo Piano, and that could have been a nice alternative job.
Karim El Sol, it is such a pleasure spending time with you. Thank you for this, sharing your insights, and we enjoyed it very much.
That was great fun.